Good morning. Today is February the 13th. You were about to say?
Tomorrow's Valentine's Day. I hope you're ready.
You're doing the countdown. I've got ideas in my head. Yes.
Oh, indeed. Yes. Yes. That's a way to prepare.
Yeah.
You're an ideas man.
I just got to reflect on things for a while. Instead, just run to the store and get something.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Experienced that one during Christmas, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Humboldt County DA Maggie Fleming is with us this morning, if you might not recognize her voice. If you do, we're probably going to question how come. Oh, are you ready for our Why Do We Say That?
Always.
Already. Mollycoddle.
Ooh.
How did a weak person come to be called a mollycoddle?
I have no idea. I know, I should at least take a stab at it.
This kind of has a legal...
It sounds like a dessert is what I immediately thought of, like a cobble, a coddle. Is that what it's from? No.
No, and that's really going to sound really weird when I read what it is. Molly is a familiar pet form of Mary, which was once contemporaneously applied to a wench or prostitute. That's the issue part. The contemptuous use led people to call an effeminate man a Molly, and to mollycoddle yourself is to take as much care of yourself as someone like that would.
Well, it's not a positive word at all. Yeah, no, it's not.
No.
I'm just glad this isn't a live show, so hopefully we can edit all this.
Oh, yeah, right. Guess what, folks? It is live.
Oh, no.
It's foggy and drizzly outside. Maggie just sunk her ship. Okay. Oh, interesting stuff. Hey, this story we had about these folks that were arrested in South Dakota, North Dakota.
Oh, right.
And brought back. How often does that kind of thing happen where there's an event here and somebody runs and you have to rely on the communication networks and the internet and various law enforcement agencies to really come to the rescue?
I'd say it happens about once or twice a month. So we spend a lot of time trying to get people back. The jail is really efficient at it. They, you know, other counties and states have arranged. There's a system, you know, basically bus system, to bring inmates back and forth across the nation. Sometimes it's not quite as high pro, or most times it's not quite as high profile. It's sort of more of a run-of-the-mill felon that we find is gone to another state. Sometimes it's people who are not from here originally who have basically gone home, but a lot of times it's people who are actually fleeing knowing that there are going to be charges brought.
So if it's not that extraordinary, that's really frightening when you think about it, because if people are leaving from here, the inverse of that would also be true, I would suppose.
That is true. And here's the thing that I've always found most interesting is when a judge issues a warrant where the crime has occurred, they issue a warrant because someone has failed to appear, they get to set bail. Then the person's arrested somewhere else, and they actually have the right to have another bail hearing. And sometimes that judge significantly lowers bail. And I always think that's so odd, because what you're saying is this person who has fled the jurisdiction of another place where they've committed a felony crime should have bail lowered so they can be released in my community. Why would you do that? Because I think I'd say as a judge, I'm going to keep bail set what the original judge said, and that's going to help us move you back.
Get this clown out of town. Yeah, yeah.
So I've always found that very odd. It's like, why would you reduce bail?
Now, will most typically go somewhere else within the state, or will they try to go and hide, you know, in the boonies?
You know, that's a really good question, because in a very real sense, you'd have a much better chance of being lost in L.A. than you would in a small town in North Dakota, where a lot of people are going to go, he's not from here. So I don't understand, you know. But again, I think people go sometimes where they have friends or they have family who can take them in. So it's more based on what makes sense financially for you to choose to do. Because a lot of people will be taken in and, to a certain extent, hidden by family members. That's automatically what a lot of folks will do for their people.
Which is really goofy, because wouldn't that be the first place that the badges would look, would be to family and friends?
That's correct. And, you know, obviously the other piece of it now is cell phones really help us locate people, because a lot of people, some people, you know, can afford to dump a cell phone, get a new one, but a lot can't. And then that allows us to figure out where people are.
Connect the dots,
or where their
literally.
Phone is. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's that would be frustrating, I would think, after somebody goes, oh, that's how you got. Oh, it might be the thought process that happens.
Part of it, too, Brian, it depends on the significance of the case, because while it's obvious to search out where family is, you can imagine for a lot of general felonies, it may not be worth the resources that it takes to figure out where people's family members live and that sort of thing. I mean, obviously, it's different when you have a high-profile homicide than if you have the guy who's wanted in our county because he's committed, you know, three theft cases of, you know, vehicles, which are, you know, can be felonies. So it's sort of that issue, too. I'm in the process now. We try really hard not to allow cases to go out to warrant and just sit on the shelf. So we do a lot of searches through all the databases to see if we can find links, you know, between family or past jobs, whatever it might be. But that's a huge amount of our resources, you know.
Is it more challenging now because unemployment is so low that people will hire folks and maybe not go through the standard procedures, so that somebody that is trying to hide where they are, let's say they're one of the smart ones and they drop their cell phone.
Yeah.
Okay. And the car isn't a newer model, so you can't do it that way either.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. You hire on as day labor somewhere rather than going through the whole process. And here's the Social Security number. Ding, and there, you know, another easy way for somebody to be traced. Don't give away all the secrets, though.
Well, no. I think for a lot of the felonies that we have pending, we'd be happy if they got a job. So, you know, there'd be a real inclination to say, hey, we're going to drop that warrant and you keep on working. You know, but no, we haven't seen a lot of, you know, the people who are out to warrant getting jobs.
And as you alluded to, there are felonies and then there are felonies.
Right. That's correct.
Yeah. Notice how I picked up on that one pretty quick, huh? It's got to be frustrating, but it's also got to be a specialty also hunting some of these guys down. We'll talk about that when we come back.
It is.
It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. Maggie, the concept of having narrow specialties, you know, dealing with people who have fled, is that a full-time position?
I mean, no.
Okay.
It's something we have made, you know, a lot of effort in the last couple of years to try to address, just because I was shocked when I realized how many of our cases were out to warrant. So literally someone just doesn't show up for court, and then it's a matter of if they get stopped by the police, say for speeding, you know, boom, the warrant shows up and they get taken in. But we don't really have the resources for people to go out and start knocking on doors. So there's been, you know, the community's gotten together, law enforcement community, and so now we do have this, you know, everybody tries to commit somebody to it and they go out, you know, and I think that's really effective, because what we really want is to encourage people to understand if you don't show up for court, there's a chance someone's either going to knock at your door or knock at your mom's door or something like that. So we what we try to do is prioritize our warrants. So I go through them and others in my office. We want the high end felonies, the ones that we really, really want to get back in custody because they're a danger to the community.
The bad guys.
The bad guys. I can't do, I mean, we have thousands and thousands and thousands of them, so I can't do them all. So we really try to say, here are our top 10 this week. And then what we do is investigators in the office, you know, try to commit a couple hours. We have a couple of folks who are really good at this who try to commit time to it, who sit down and start running them through all the databases and do searches for them.
Just to see if they pop up somewhere?
Right. And they're connectors. So, okay, here's their last address. We know that's mom's address. Let's check there. But then we also know, oh, for a while he was living over here. So they go through that and try to narrow it down. And sometimes when the officer knocks on that door, they'll say, oh, he hasn't been here for a few months, but now he's living over. And then that's how they find the person. So that's been really effective. The other part about it is if they're brought back in custody, there's a good chance they may not be released, in which case they have a right to proceed to their case, time not waived, very quickly. So part of what we're doing is we go through the file, make sure we could still prove the case.
You're ready to run.
Because that's, when a case gets 2 or 3 years old, I mean, I've already experienced, and most people have in this community, stores have closed, you know. So if you had a robbery at what used to be Payless, then was CVS, and then was Long's, or I got the order wrong, you know, there's a good chance you're not going to be able to prove that anymore because those people are gone. So it's really...
So is it worth chasing, though?
It is, but that's part of, we got to do the upfront work. So, and then that's the other calculation I make. So I get alerted when someone's been taken in custody on a warrant out of state or out of county, and I immediately pull the file and review it to say, can I bring him back in this moment and then prove the case? And frankly, the other part of the calculation is, do we want to bring this person back? You know, because there are some, you know, really low-level type felonies that maybe we're happier to know he's no longer in our community, or maybe he's gone back to where his family is, and now he's going to be a completely different person than he was when he was...
Just not worth chasing.
Yeah. So, and then with those, generally, I dismiss the case and pull the warrant out of the system because there's no reason.
That's what I was wondering. Why still have it then?
So we are also going through, and this is something that I believe must be done annually. And so since I took office 5 years ago, we've worked really hard to try to clear out the old warrants. I mean, we have dismissed, unfortunately, thousands of old cases just because we didn't do it in real time. But trying to be right about what warrants are in the system, because that's the only thing that I think is fair. You shouldn't get stopped and arrested, you know, 12 years after you did a crime, and I can't prove it anymore and still have you held in, because that's just crazy. So that's been a huge amount.
Well, you don't have the capacity to do that either, do you? The physical capacity.
No. But it's just, the idea is that we really do have to stay on top of going through. But part of doing that is recognizing there are people in our community. I had a case where a guy, I can't remember if it was second, his third DUI. He has an address, right? It's like, why haven't we gone there and knocked on that door? Because that's somebody who I know in this community is very dangerous. You know, our repeat drunk drivers are the people that, unfortunately, you know, it results in fatality. So trying to work really hard at figuring out who's on the warrant wall, who's our priority, and can we go find them in real time?
Yeah, which ones can you pick up?
Right.
Just because you make the effort.
So we've also been doing those news releases, you know, where we put out DA's offices looking for these three. That's been really, really effective because generally everybody's got somebody who's mad at them, who even calls us and says, do you know where he is? He's over here, right at this place. So that's been helpful. Sometimes it's been other people who, you know, have known them for other reasons who...
Subsequent to the event.
Yeah. So it's just been, that's been really effective, and that's helped too. And again, I just hope that for the people who go, geez, I should go into court and take care of this, or else, you know, I could be either having someone at my door or have my face on the news. So I'm hoping that that ultimately is going to result in more people actually showing up for court like they're supposed to.
A little bit of a prod?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I would think that if you are supposed to show up and you are considering not.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a different breed of character.
Right.
You know, most of the people probably that you deal with.
Right.
Are a different breed of character to start with, so
right.
You know, you're not dealing with regular folks or what we think about.
Yeah,
but I would think not showing up is a pretty significant decision for some of these folks.
It is, and it's unfair when you think there are those people who have been arrested, who are given a date for court, who show up and accept the consequences for their action. And then the guy next to them says, I'm not going to show up for court. And then nothing happens. That is not fair.
Right. Yeah, man up, yeah. So to speak. It's 8:30.
Locally owned businesses help our community maintain a distinct personality and to help increase tourism because we don't look like every other place. Small businesses also provide the ability to try on and try out items before you buy and get real expertise, saving you both time and money. When you shop, shop local.
Our award-winning camping department has the gear you need no matter what kind of camping you do. Come in and experience the many benefits of shopping with Pacific Outfitters.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, Humble Termite and Pest Control, Murphy's Markets, and Redec. Maggie, the concept of extradition state to state or county to county is one thing, but when the international component comes into play, I think it's pretty well documented. Bulgaria, Russia, Mexico, Canadians, I suppose, to a certain extent. That's where a vast majority of these folks are coming from that you interact with. It's not like the expired student visa. This is something a little bit different. When there's the international component, how does that change this dynamic?
Again, it's a matter of is it worth it to expend the funds to bring the person back, or is it better to say they're there?
Or to get them out of here.
Or to get them out of here, yes. So we've had a number of people associated with cannabis grows who are from other countries. We don't necessarily, we have not brought anybody back for that. I know, I'm going to say 5-6 years ago maybe, we brought someone back from Mexico because it was a homicide and tried that person and convicted them. So we're willing to do it for that, but it is sort of extremely time-consuming and expensive. So it's something that we carefully evaluate. Is it worth it to bring the person back? And, you know, part of it, frankly, the equation changed when California changed for what crimes you can go to prison, because with so many of our felonies now only being local jail time, I'm not going to use the resources to bring somebody back who's then going to sit in our jail and then be released back into our community, right? I mean, all kidding aside, there is that element of, hey, you've got them, you keep them. So
right, and that would make sense for a lot of that. So
right,
is there a magic demarcation line? If you do this, we're coming after you.
Right.
If you
yeah.
do this, probably not.
So I look at it in terms of the violent, serious offenses. As soon as you said that, I remembered we've done the same. We've worked really hard to bring back people who are sex offenders, you know, where we have a violent sex crime. Particularly recently, it was against a child. We're going to bring that person back. We're going to do whatever we got to do to bring them back. But we also recognize those crimes carry a different, you know, it's a much more serious penalty. So we know they're going to go to prison for a number of years. But again, that's also a critical public safety. Wherever they are, they're going to harm somebody. So we have to do all we can to pull them out of the community and bring them back. Versus, like I say, the people who were here growing cannabis, when they go back home, I don't think that they're doing it there. They're just, you know, that's what they came here to do. So it's a different, that's sort of the factor I look at is public safety, wherever they are. You know, if they can possibly harm another person or
the repeatability
child,
of
yeah,
their
that's
event.
The yeah. person I've got to really say it's on us. You know, we have proof that they committed a crime here. We got to go get them, bring them back, and try them.
Now, does the state have similar standards that they will look at, either the state AG or whoever, when they're going after people?
You know, I don't know, because the state AG doesn't handle a lot of the types of crimes we do. You know, they only take cases if there's a recusal, you know, so when the local DA can't, either because of, you know, the person involved is from their office or whatever, or for some other reason. So I don't know, because what they see are such different crimes than what we handle, you know, run of the mill. So I don't know how they factor.
The violence component is something obviously that is a variable into the equation. What about if it is a civil crime? Is there a dollar amount or a number? Let's say a fraud and, I mean, it's never happened here, so 400 people lost their jobs. Or like the Enron, where there was a pyramid scheme or a Ponzi scheme or something like that, and life savings disappear. Is there an equivalent standard if it's a financial impact versus a criminal impact?
So I would imagine they would still want to get that person. You know, when you start thinking of sort of the person who's really destroyed a lot of lives, I think.
Yeah, the ripple.
Yeah, and then the feds do have, you know, a different sort of set of resources than what we have. So that, I hope, would also be part of the equation.
With some of those other law enforcement entities, you mentioned partners, other agencies, whether it's FBI or DOJ or CIA or whatever, are you able to access them, or do have to run through channels to get to them?
No, we have
you got the bat phone and you can just give them a call?
Yeah, I got a bat phone. No,
it's
great
better than the red phone, right? Yeah, you know, we don't blow anything up.
We do have, you know, obviously our local FBI agents here, which are great because they can assist us. And then the U.S. Marshal is a fantastic resource and has really helped us, particularly when people have left the state, because they have great resources. So they're very, very helpful. And I think they're participating with the other local agencies on that, you know, where we're going out and finding people or out to warrant.
If there's concerns, you know, early on with I guess, the after effects of 9/11, you know, at the airport, I mean, you know, the sheriff's going around with mirrors underneath cars and all that kind of stuff, you know, the concern was heightened. If there was something involving at the airport or any federal jurisdiction, do they come to you? Or would they go to a federal entity to do the follow-up or the prosecution?
So it sort of depends. So the crimes that are specifically California crimes, when they occur at the airport, comes to us, which, you know, if you have that airport in your county, then it's on you. There are, I mean, if it was, say, someone was trying to take over a plane or something, that would be federal jurisdiction and not something we would handle per se. It's sort of the same division we see with our U.S. parks that are here in Humboldt.
That's what I was saying,
the
National Park, yeah.
We handle the crimes that are specific to California. If it was something related to a federal crime, then the feds would actually take it.
And where does that get tried? In San Francisco?
Right now they can go to our federal courthouse in McKinleyville, but I understand trials are generally going to San Francisco.
Well, that'd be a shocker. There'd actually be somebody in the building.
There is.
They would have to be paying attention to what's going on instead. Yeah. all our former deputies. You don't have to comment. I know them. KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:43.
Are you a business owner looking for financial or technical assistance? An entrepreneur looking to start a new business? The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission and the Small Business Development Center want to help. With business loans, classes, and one-on-one consulting, our goal is your success. We've been helping Humboldt County businesses for over 30 years. Visit us at 520 E Street, Eureka, the Prosperity Center, or find us on the web. The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission and Small Business Development Center. We're here for you.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:46. We're back talking shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. Maggie, with some of the different partnering that goes on, is there an awful lot of interaction with the Coast Guard and with the military services that are either in the area or coming through the area that can also help and assist? I'm thinking the Coasties, particularly because of the drug seizures that is one of their primary missions. Do you see the benefit? Do we see the benefit of the law enforcement side of their presence?
Absolutely, and they do. They partner. They're always available. I mean, obviously, I think everybody's most familiar with their incredible search and rescue. You know, sometimes that would fall to the U.S. Parks Rangers or, you know, to some of the others. Recently, when that pilot went down in the bay, the Coast Guard immediately is, you know, providing assistance. But also for, you know, when people have been talking about concerns about sort of that high flight risk person that is on the move, They can provide assistance. Obviously, so does the CHP. They get a helicopter right away over from, I think it comes directly from Reading to us. So there is a lot of partnering. And then they also are available to work, to train for, you know, we talk about various possible problems that could occur, whether it be sort of the high-risk situation we might have with shooters or other, and they work with us and train with us for those.
Do you think the community fully understands their level of participation in the benefits?
I think some do. You know, I think that's why, like, Eureka City had that partnership with them, and they always recognize them annually, and because they do provide so many services to our community that really should be acknowledged and appreciated.
That's far too short an answer.
I grew up in a big family.
Yeah, yeah.
You had to get in and get out because your time was over.
Oh, fair enough. The federal marshal is something that I think a lot of folks are totally unfamiliar with. What is that office's function?
So they handle, you know, locally they're involved with federal crimes that are available for those arrests, but then they also assist with people who are out to warrant. They have a lot of resources, you know, at their fingertips. And then they have, obviously, the communication between all the other jurisdictions. So they're assisting, you know, when you have the guy who did robberies in Kansas City, who Kansas City believes is now here, U.S. Marshal is really involved with finding that person and getting them back.
So they're kind of the conduit?
Right. And then they've done the reverse, too. When we had a parolee one time who had fled our jurisdiction, and they were involved in making sure they found that person and brought them back and got them back into our prison.
Not like the old Wild Wild West days.
No.
Sorry, Robert Conrad.
No. No.
But they still have a very viable service that they provide.
Yes.
The FBI is kind of this big mysterious shroud, I think. You know, everybody feels like they are aware of what the FBI does, either, you know, J. Edgar Hoover or the TV series that have come and gone. Is that close at all to what they do? Are stereotypes?
Is TV ever close to, or no, and you said J. Edgar Hoover, so you were talking historically. It's interesting because I think in a very real sense, they're federal officers who are handling local issues. You know, they're in place to help us, to support us.
Well, the investigation part
right. Is
pretty self-explanatory,
right. But
they're not often portrayed as being investigators. It's
right. More
capturing.
And they are investigators, too. And they have, obviously, you know, additional resources. We've historically had an FBI agent off and on assigned to our drug task force, which is really helpful, you know, because obviously they have a different connecting resource system than our local guys do.
So lots of folks are out there trying to get bad guys.
That's right.
All right. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
See everybody tomorrow.